time block, time block, time block. When I've got a task or a mission, like everything else goes off, no one can bother me, and I just focus on that one thing.
Hey, freedom fighters, welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the only place where military members, veterans, and their families learn how to build wealth through real estate investing. I'm your host, Mike Foster, and I'm here to show you how to stop wasting your benefits. Now get off your ass, step up to the firing line, and make ready for today's lesson. Shooter standby.
Hey, ADPI Nation, Kevin here. Before we start this week's show, I want to take a quick second to talk about systems. The business systems that you put in place will determine your success and your financial future. Well, I got news for you. No one teaches you these systems, not in school, and unfortunately not in the military either. That's why the ADPI team banded together to create the best and most comprehensive system that anyone out there, no matter their level, could learn from and build upon. We call it our Military Real Estate Investing Academy. Our 80 plus lesson course will take you from real estate newbie to full-fledged military real estate investor and action taker. Click the link in the show notes and use code ATOM, A-T-O-M, at checkout for $300 off today. That's code ATOM, A-T-O-M, for $300 off today. Now, let's start the show. Hey, what's going on, everyone? Kevin Brenner, host of the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, and you are listening to another amazing episode with another amazing guest. This is Brent Bowers. So this guy, he is incredible because what he does for other people, but I'm going to let him do a lot of the introduction, but I'm going to take my shot at the introduction right here because it's incredible what Brent, what you have done, but started out enlisted in the Army, became an officer in the Army, and realized, hey, I want to spend more time with my family. Let me look into real estate. And instead of just looking into regular real estate, I think he kind of took a specialty route and he said, what about the land? Why can't I just buy and sell vacant land? And the fact of the matter is that you can, he did, he is doing, and now he coaches others how to do it. And that's his give back. And he's going to tell us all about the pros and cons of buying land and how it has set himself up with financial freedom. And so if you're looking for an interesting way to get into real estate, something that you may have never heard of before, this episode is certainly for you. So without further ado, Brent Bowers, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kevin. It's such an honor.
Yeah, I mean, this is an intriguing episode for me because, you know, the more you get into real estate and you know, you master one craft, whether it's buy and holds or short-term rentals or, you know, large commercial, whatever you're doing, right? You're kind of in that niche and you start doing it and you get comfortable with it. And then as real estate investors or as entrepreneurs, we're constantly pushing their boundaries and we're operating in that like fringe of our comfort zone. And to me, buying and selling raw land is kind of the fringe of my comfort zone. So I'm excited to hear, you know, what you have to say about it and how, you know, I'm really excited to hear your story. But we're going to start off with your military background and we're going to start off with the fact that it sounds like the Air Force didn't want you.
Oh, it's the first thing you bring up here, huh?
That's the first thing I bring up. You told me in the pre-show, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to pour salt on this wound.
I thought we'd like break the ice and, you know, have a few drinks.
No, man. No. You know, we got copy. We
start slow, but we're going to just kick it off.
No, man. I want the story. I want your military background. But mostly, I want to understand why real estate in general, and then we're going to dig into why land.
All right. I love something that you brought up, you know, operate out of your comfort zone. I'm so familiar with that. And I kind of try and make it a point to do it every so often with physical, mental, life, business, marriage, you know. and, you know, Tony Robbins talks about the threshold of comfort. Like it's like skiing those double black diamonds. You get so close to the edge and eventually that threshold gets a little wider. You start doing, you know, other things that make you a little more uncomfortable. And eventually it's normal. It's like you get used to driving 120 miles an hour on the Autobahn and you just slow down to 40. It's like, this is boring now because you're now used to a certain, like a higher speed. So, all right. So why in the heck the Air Force wouldn't allow me to join? So I actually started in 2007. I bought my first rental house. I had just got my real estate license as well before the military. So I started in real estate and then ended up in the military. Took a break while I was deployed a couple times overseas. And then when I got back to the United States, I just hit the ground running again and then was able to get out of the military to, you know, spend more time with my family. But so I just bought that first house in 2007, had to borrow some money from great grandma to actually put the earnest money deposit down. But I was able to pay her back because I got a real estate commission for buying my own rental. I was the buyer's agent. Well, I moved to the coast. I'm going to buy some more properties, and how I'm going to pay for this is I'm actually going to list other people's property, you know, help people buy houses and get commissions, right? Well, 2008, 2009 was happening, and my grandfather, you know, I really looked up to him. He introduced me to Jim Rohn. He's like, you know, wow. Join the Air Force. Well, he didn't personally introduce me. He gave me the cassette.
Oh, thing. Okay. I got you. I was like, oh yeah, really my grandpa was cool. Best friends with Jim Rohn.
That would have been really cool, actually. He gave me the cassette tapes, and I didn't have a cassette player. So I had to convert them to CD. It's all about being resourceful, you know, figure out a way to do it. And those, you know, clickety clackety choppity tapes, I'll never forget them. And that just introduced me to a whole new world of self-development, personal development. And this was right before the military. So he said, join the Air Force, you know, do 20 years, you'll have a cush retirement. So I'm a very good student. I'm easily coached. So what did I do? Me and my wife went down to the Air Force recruiting station, filled out all the paperwork. It was super awesome, super excited. And they said, hey, we don't take people like you. You know, and I was like, what the heck? So when I was,
yeah. Oh man.
So
what did they say that for?
I jumped through all their hoops. I'd like to say because they were just too full. They weren't taking new people at the time, but no, it was
me. I think it's because you're too good looking.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it. I would like to say, I always say, I wish I was born wealthy rather than so darn good looking.
I know.
So I actually have some counts of battery on my record. Me and a friend were jumped one night by several guys, and we fought back really hard, and they pressed charges on us. So
wait, the guys who jumped you pressed charges on you?
Yes, yes. So what? I literally have 6 counts of battery on my record, still to this day. Never had to do any time for it. No community service. It was actually all thrown out by the state's attorney. I had a pretty good business going at the time at 18 years old. So I had made too much money for a public defender. So I had to hire an attorney for all of this. It was such a pain in the butt. I thought it ruined my life because I couldn't join the Air Force. But, you know, it turns out I dodged a bullet. I joined a way cooler branch called the United States Army because the Air Force recruiter was kind enough to say, look, you know, go next door. The Army will take anybody. So I did. And before I was in basic training 2 months later, went through basic, then bounced to Germany and was in Afghanistan by November 2010.
Wow.
So
that was that's a crazy story. I'm still on this. You get jumped and they press charges on you. That's like that's like someone robbing a convenience store and then like, I don't know, like charging the convenience store owner or after them legally, like, you made it too easy to rob.
My buddy that was with me, the other guy that got jumped with me, he's a fighter, man. He beat the heck out of those guys. So I just got to stand there and, you know, watch and got hit a couple times. So really it's because of him, honestly. Like, he just beat them up too bad and they were all pissed about it and pressed charges on us.
Man, that is wild. So, okay. So you're in the Army now. So this is interesting because I didn't know you started real estate before you got into your military service. So you were a licensed real estate agent. You had this home. Where was this first home?
Okeechobee, Florida.
Okay. All right. So, and that's central-ish Florida, correct?
It's just about an hour and a half south of Orlando, Disney
okay,
World.
Okay. So kind of, yeah. Okay. Got it. Right. So you got it going on there. And then, you decide to join the service. And now you're faced, you're in Germany, you're in Afghanistan. So when do you pick up back with real estate?
Yeah, I was actually on my second deployment. I did pretty much back-to-back deployments. The one in 2010, I was there for right at almost 1 year. I remember exactly where I was when they killed Osama bin Laden. And then we were back for exactly 12 months and then back in Afghanistan. So I was only in Afghanistan the second time for 4 months. But I had been putting packets in to become an Army officer. You know, I made it to E5, Sergeant E5. And I was like, man, I'm going to become an officer. So I kept putting packets in to be accepted into the active duty green to gold program. The first time, no, I wasn't accepted. And they only choose up to like 100 to 150 active duty soldiers. And it's where I would get my E5 salary while I'm going to school. And then I could use the GI Bill to pay for school as well. So it was a super cool.
Because you needed the degree.
Yeah, I needed to have a degree to be an officer. So funny story, like University of Phoenix credits, none of those went transferred over to my college.
So you had to restart.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I actually drove by University of Phoenix the other day and I was like, man, I should go buy a carton of eggs, like egg the building, because they got a lot of my money.
They got a lot of my money. That was not a cash flowing return for you, was it?
No.
Oh my God. Don't get me started.
Yeah. But anyhow, that's a whole nother subject. They'll probably sue me now if they ever hear that, that comment. But, The second time, my boss was so confident that I made it into the active duty green to gold program, he got me on a space available flight. I think I flew out of from Camp Leatherneck to Bagram and then back to Germany. And I found out I wasn't accepted for the second time. So
you're
I was like,
kidding me.
Super crushed, man. I was like sitting in the commander's office, like feet on his desk, because no one was. Like there was no one there. They were all forward deployed and I'm the only loser that gets sent back because he got accepted in the green to gold program, but not really. So I'm like I'm sitting in his office, my feet are on his desk and I call him in Afghanistan. I was like, sir, I didn't get picked up. What do I need to do? Do I need to come back? Mm. I was literally like ready to cry and he goes, no, just stay there. And I was like, that's even worse. Like, I'm going to like be pulling CQ every night. Literally that day I'm on CQ.
Yeah.
So I'm on CQ and it's like a long night. And my first sergeant's looking for me. And like he comes in at like 6 a.m. My phone's already dead because I've been playing on it all night. And he's like, slam some paperwork on my desk. He's like, go get ready. You got to clear Germany in literally 12 hours because you're going to college. And I was like, you don't know what you're talking about, first sergeant. I wasn't accepted. He's like, it says right here you were.
I
cleared post in 12 hours and got the heck out. And then this is 2013. Going to college. I'm having some free time on my hand now. I get back into buying rentals. So I started house hacking, literally house hacking, because I no longer had that first wife because she moved in with another dude whenever I was deployed on the second deployment. Started house hacking before it was cool. And that was my journey back into real estate in 2013. And I haven't stopped since. I've got 9 people on my team right now. We're doing millions of dollars a year. And life's great.
Man, that's wild. So you're going to school. Now, when you did this green to gold program, is that like ROTC? Like you got to go to school and you're doing ROTC. Okay. So yeah, exactly. You're doing ROTC. Man, that's awesome. So I bet I can't imagine because I did ROTC at school in Florida. And
where?
University of Miami.
Oh, so very cool.
I'm a U guy. Yeah.
Florida Tech.
Okay. Florida Tech. Yeah. And I'm thinking, you look at where you are now and then you think about, you know, wow, what if I started this journey like much earlier? But in school, I was such an idiot. Because so I probably could have bought a house or figured out how to get a house and house hack, you know, get it financed somehow and house hack while I was in college. I just never did. So hopefully there's some ROTC students listening now and, you know, and can learn from what you just told them. But so
you want to hear something even crazier about my house hack story?
Yeah.
Like how you think you were an idiot. I was even bigger idiot because I was house hacking and my first roommate was one of the largest Bitcoin miners in Florida.
You're kidding me.
He had a a building that had 12 5-ton ACs on it. Like a 5-ton AC usually runs about a 4,000 square foot house.
Yeah.
So just to, so for,
they're about
for
five grand. Well, actually, yeah. No, they're about $7,500 for
go.
5-ton. Yeah.
So this guy tried to pay me Bitcoin for the entire year and a half he lived with me.
Oh no.
And I'm mining Litecoin too. I was into the coins a little bit, just enough to be dangerous. But he's trying to pay me Bitcoin the entire time. And I'm like, no, dude, cash only. That $600 really came in handy because I was making money to live there. And I was investing it back into another rental. So it worked out. I got my rental business started. But my goodness, what I would have.
Just humor me here, Brent. How many coins was he offering you?
I don't know how many coins, but I just did the math. Like I looked at what it would have. I did the numbers that like backwards amount, what $600 a month for 18 months would have turned into. And it would have been like 27 million or so ish, give or take a few dollars. I've got a lot of what not to do on the show.
Well, this isn't really a crypto show, but that
I know. Is, yeah. That, enough that of that.
That is one of the larger regrets I've heard in a while. So we all have them, but it doesn't matter because you can't, no one has a crystal ball. No one can look into the future and you have to, you know, focus on what you want to focus on. And I think that's going to be, you know, as we dive deeper into this, we're going to learn how you focused on land. So continuing your story, you're house hacking, you transition, you commission, then where do you go?
All right. So I commission and very soon after that was 2015, May 2015, I commissioned. So, and I had bought a couple more houses in Palm Bay in Melbourne, Florida, and started wholesaling because I needed some extra cash. So I did a couple haphazard wholesales with houses. That was really fun. And then I was like, man, this is working out because I'm super leveraged, like in debt is probably the real word I should say for that because my Amex is maxed out. My Capital One is maxed. My Home Depot account is maxed out because when you buy a rental that's a fixer up with some equity, you can improve it by forcing equity. Like it takes a lot of renovations. So, I mean, because no one wants to rent a crappy house and I didn't want to be a slumlord. So now I'm maxed out basically. And so I'm like, okay, wholesaling houses is easy. You can do that. So I did that really quickly. Haphazardly, like I said, and then I hired a coach with Wholesaling Inc., Tom Kroll at the time. Mm-hmm. And now I've got the honor of being a Wholesaling Inc.'s land coach. So literally one of the best accomplishments of my life doing that. So I hired Tom to coach me. 2015's happening. We now moved to Colorado. I'm married to a wonderful woman. We start having babies. My first son is on the way. We now have three kids. But I'm like, this is a struggle, man. I'm working like 13 hours a day. I've got to be on post by 6 a.m. to do PT. And then I'm leaving at like 7 p.m. at night. And there's not really much time to go meet sellers because you got to establish rapport. You got to talk to them. You got to listen, make them feel seen, heard, and understood their situation. But you can't do that when you only have like an hour for a lunch break. So you speed off base, go meet the seller, 5 minutes. And if it didn't get that property under contract, I didn't get the deal. And I definitely didn't follow up because I just didn't have time. So it's about early 2016. Now I've done several more deals, haphazardly still. And I heard this guy on a podcast talking about how he's buying land at like pennies on the dollar. And then selling it like for massive profits. I mean, like a return on investment that would make Bernie Madoff look like a little saint. So I'm just like, goodness gracious, why am I not mailing the land too? Because I was mailing houses, spending a fortune mailing houses. Like if I didn't do a deal in like 2 months, I would have went bankrupt.
And when you say, and Brent, when you say mailing houses, you mean you're providing, you're sending I'm totally blanking right now. The advertisements in the mail. What are those?
Yeah, I'll send the postcards. Literally postcards. Sending a postcard.
You're sending the postcards. You're sending the postcards. You're trying to get that traffic. So you're asking, why am I not mailing landowners?
Yeah, because like at that time I was working on the tax delinquent list. And I'm like, holy cow, I'm like completely just throwing these land records away. So I called, I was using a Filipino virtual assistant, which is, she's now actually moved to the United States and she's a nurse now. She's been with me for years. But she was helping me scrub my list. I was like, so please go ahead and scrub this one too. We include the land records within like a week. I am now mailing land a postcard that said, hey, I'd like to buy your property located here. If you'd like a fair cash offer, call me. Well, that simple postcard mailed out the 687 land records behind on their taxes. Like these people are not paying their property taxes. So we call it tax delinquent.
Right.
My phone almost melted with phone calls.
Wow.
So I'm like, what the heck is going on? So me being the great real estate investor I am, I had time to return about 20 of those phone calls out of 87 phone calls. So out of those 20 phone calls I returned, I did two deals that paid me a net profit of $4,500 each. So I get $9,000 in my bank account within like 3 weeks of mailing that first postcard. So I was like, this is crazy. There's no way. This is like too good to be true. And that second deal I did gave me a passive income of $400 a month.
So now I have all the questions. So you're mailing, you know, so you're applying wholesaling concepts, you're applying marketing concepts, you know, direct mail, right? Yeah. Instead of looking up lists like, hey, who's delinquent on their taxes, who had their water shut off, who's been in jail, or who, you know, whatever, like those classic wholesaling lists. You're instead doing this and finding, hey, who's behind on your taxes that owns vacant land? And guys, vacant land, I mean, and Brent, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but people get passed down vacant land all the time, you know, in their families. People don't even know they own it. You know,
I actually have a student like that. Bought a piece of land they didn't know they owned.
Yeah. So you go out here now. Are you wholesaling this land? Is that the plan effectively?
So kind of. Yeah, really I was wholesaling because I needed to sell it fast. I get asked all the time by my students, hey, what if I get stuck with this land? I was like, hey, what if you had a buyer before you bought the land? Like you had someone that's ready to give you cash before you even paid the seller. So that's what I was doing. I was like literally wholesaling it as fast as possible. But one thing I really liked was holding the financing because that opened up my buyer pool because most people aren't walking around with $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. They are walking around with like $1,000. And they can afford $300 or $400 or $500 a month. So that was my niche.
So let me ask you this, Brent. We covered who wants to we covered why people would sell vacant land, right? Why would sellers sell? Well, because they're back on their taxes, they don't know they own it, blah, blah, blah. Who the heck wants to buy vacant land?
It's really, I think, a better question is who doesn't want to buy vacant land?
Oh, okay.
No, it's virtually like I say I have no competition in this. There's virtually no competition. I would say most of your listeners probably on here have driven by land in the last couple of weeks and haven't even looked at it because, the show is called Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, right? Mm-hmm. How can you make passive income from land? There's no house on it to rent out. There's no mobile home park. There's no storage units. There's nothing to make money. Well, how I make money on it is I get it at such a massive discount. I'm able to sell it at retail and premium prices because I get the down payment and a monthly income. And that down payment, in a perfect world, that down payment covers my purchase price. So getting to answer your question, who would want to buy vacant land? Is there's a lot of people. When you make it easy and affordable for somebody, like when you're offering the lands and the financing, and it's easy financing. They just come in with a down payment and a monthly payment they can afford. I mean, just the opportunity opens up and you have people beating down your door for it. And every land that you do, every parcel of land that you do, your buyer's list gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because not everyone wants to buy that 3 acres that you're selling right here, but they might buy the 10 acres or the buildable lot or the infill lot that you're selling a year from now type thing. So Who is my avatar? 90% of my land is someone that wants to, you know, just buy a piece of land on the outskirts of the city, you know, to camp on or build a cabin one day or park their RV. I took my kids camping like last year. They don't talk about like the cool mountains and the camper. They talk about being able to help me build the fire and roast the marshmallows, create memories. So that's 90% of my avatar, but the other 10%, because I do this, the city lots, the infill lots, the buildable lots too. And those are builders. Those are developers. Those are flippers that are sick of chasing after the dirty old stinky cat pee houses and competing with other investors that just want to control the process from the ground up. And they'll pay retail for that land.
Yeah. So you're going in and when you say you're buying this on pennies on the dollar, you know, are these auction deals? Are these, how does the deal acquisition process look for you?
Yeah, I am buying from the actual owner of the land. And most of the time, when it's a tax delinquent property, it's right before the auction happens and they're about to lose it. So we get them some money, we get the back taxes paid, but I'm also doing deals with people that are not behind on taxes. They're not out of state. They may have inherited the land or they bought it years ago because someday maybe they were going to build a cabin on it or they went on vacation. And they thought, this is a beautiful area. Let's buy some land. And they never come back to it. Or it's just like a wife that her husband was a builder and he passed away and they own several lots type thing. So it's like anybody and everybody. And that, I love that fact that you said inherited land that they didn't even know they owned. I have a student that did it was a $90,000 profit deal on a piece of land that he bought from a seller that she did not even know she owned.
Wow. That is crazy. So, so this is all obviously super, super interesting to me right now, but also to, I'm sure, a lot of our listeners. The land purchasing process, is that different than the purchasing process from buying a home, like as if you were going to, you know, house hack and stuff? Like, what does financing look like? Or I guess you're in your scenario, where as if you were going to wholesale the land, you would want to buy it cash, right?
Yeah, most of the time. I mean, but that doesn't work for everybody because I didn't have cash when I was starting out. But yeah, absolutely, it's different from buying a house. It's way easier, one, because you don't have to inspect it. You don't have to see if the roof's leaking. Literally, we just bought a new house in Florida. The roof is leaking in like three spots, and we didn't know that, and we even had it inspected. You don't have to worry about cleaning it or checking the foundation or does it have termites, asbestos, all that kind of stuff. Like, land is just clean. There's nothing to be inspected on it. Number two is most of the time the sellers have no emotion in the deal because they didn't lay their head there at nighttime. They didn't raise their family on that land.
How do you become a successful military real estate investor? It starts with having a strong squad and trustworthy mortgage broker by your side. Hey guys, Kevin here. I wanted to take a quick break from the show to help you fill out your real estate investment dream team. Whether you're looking to fund your first VA house hack, close on an out-of-state turnkey investment, or just have a conversation with a lender who speaks your language, make sure you reach out to ADPI's team of qualified mortgage pros. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team is standing by to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL, D-E-A-L, to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show. The due diligence process on land. So walk me through something here. Let's just walk through a scenario, or it could be a real life scenario that you've done yourself, if you have a story there. But let's say you send a mailer out, tax delinquent, someone calls you back and they say, hey, I want to sell you my, 10 acres. You say, okay, well, let's put it under contract for, whatever X price. Then what happens? It's under contract. What does a due diligence process look like on land? Are you going out there? You're looking at satellite images? Like, what are you looking at?
All the above. I used to go out and look at all of it. I no longer do it. We send somebody or we hire someone in the area. We definitely look at satellite images. I actually have a virtual assistant in the Philippines that she does. There's like 15 things that she checks. And I would even share that with your listeners. I've got a link that they can go to, and I provide that as a free gift.
That'd be wonderful. We could put that in our show notes, guys. Yeah. If you're listening right now, Brent's going to share that link with us, and just scroll down, tap that link, and you get that resource. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's thelandsharks.com/DD, as in due diligence or Delta Delta. Thelandsharks.com/DD. Those are 14 or 15 items that my virtual assistant checks on top of a title company doing their title check and all that kind of stuff. Are any liens, encumbrances? But I want to give a quick tip. One thing that we found, even with title companies checking for liens, encumbrances, whatnot, like water liens, power liens, we found that we still have to call the water company and the electric company, because if there's like a hookup or a water tap and no one's ever used it, sometimes they charge monthly fees, but they won't put a lien on the property. And this fee could have been going on for the last 20 years at $20 a month. That really adds up. And we've caught
who's charging the fee? The power company's charging?
The water company for just having the water tap there.
Even though it's not even access, just the access point.
Exactly. $20 a month really adds up. And there was no lien, so the title company didn't catch it. But we caught it by calling the water company. Little things like that you want to check and understand, because, you know, those little things can kind of trip you up in the beginning, and you want as least mistakes happen as much as possible. The least amount of mistakes to happen until you've kind of established and you know, built up a bank account for those rainy days.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I guess when you're purchasing this land, well, actually, would you be able to tell a story and share some numbers on a deal? It doesn't have to be like a smoking deal, just an average deal, just to give our listeners kind of like a how it would look from a financial standpoint.
Can I talk about my first deal? Because
I love that
one always. And that, I mean, it's not like a home run or anything, but it changed my life.
Right.
What's that?
I said, let's do that. Let's do that.
All right, cool. This is not like my average deal now, because we evolve, we operate out of the comfort zone from time to time. So they range in all different sizes and shapes. But so that first deal, I remember it like it was yesterday. The guy called me. He was a retired CPA. He was not hurting for money, not distressed. He like traded this land. He traded some CPA work for many years for this land. And he'd been paying the back taxes on it, and he got behind. He no longer cared about it anymore. So he's like, hey, it's not buildable. You know, check it out if you want. I'll sell it to you. I offered him literally $385
for the
two lots. They're two lots with Pike National Forest in Colorado. And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm going to buy this, because I just don't understand it. So I drove there, me and my wife and my newborn son, early 2016. And we drove there. We're like, man, this is incredible. This land's got to be worth a lot. Like, why is it not buildable? So we're driving down the hill, heading home, got about an hour and a half drive. And it's like literally as if God planted a real estate office there for me to call. I saw this real estate office and I'm like, I'm just going to call this real estate office. They're going to know about this land, right? Mm-hmm. So a lady answers the phone on a Saturday, licensed realtor. And I was like, hey, I'm looking at this piece of land to buy. It's on Lake Avenue. She goes, oh yeah, I'm familiar with the area. I don't know why it's not buildable. She told me why. It's only one ingress and egress. So the fire department will not let you build.
Oh, I see.
Because
of wildfires and stuff or something like
that.
Yeah. Right.
So they had to spend like a couple million dollars to build a bridge over the railroad tracks, and the railroad company is not allowing it. So my 1-year-old son just woke up. So basically she's like, yeah, I'm familiar with that. I was like, all right, what is the 30-day blowout price? What's the get it done now sales price if you were to list this on the MLS for me? Because I'm trying to figure out if I can buy it or not. She goes, I don't know about 30 days, but I'd say a couple months, you could sell it for $10,000 on the MLS. And I was like, what? All right. So I hang up with her, thanked her for her time. I said, I'll call you when I get it. She calls me back in 5 minutes and goes, Brent, can I buy it? I was like, what are you offering? She said, $5,000. I said, when can you close? She said, on Wednesday. I was like, 4 days from now? She goes, yeah. And me, I'm an expert negotiator. So I was like, let's do it. So she sent me the contract, legit land contract. And I called my seller. I said, can we meet on Tuesday? I'll pay you for the land. Bring me the deed. So met him on Tuesday, paid him the $385, brought it to the title company that night. Wednesday, went and picked up my $5,000 check, like literally 24 hours later.
Hold up. So I just can't. Okay. $385. That's like two cell phone bills for me. So you're talking about buying two lots, right? Two lots.
Yep.
For two AT&T cell phone bills. And you were, you know, and then you sold it for whatever, $5,000. You probably could have got more, but whatever.
Oh, heck yeah, I could have gotten more.
Doesn't matter. That's not the point. I just don't, like, it's crazy to me that the CPA, the seller, would just let you have it for $385. He obviously didn't do any research on this.
He didn't care. It was not billable in his mind.
So in his mind, this was just like, if he had a family member, he probably would have given it to them for free. Like if he
probably, I get land for free all the time. I got a piece of free land one time that I was afraid to buy it because it had a building on it. Mm-hmm. That the seller told me there's asbestos in the building. I was like, I told my team, do not buy that.
Yeah.
Just get it under contract for nothing. So we literally got it under contract for the $1, and we would pay all the back taxes, so like $4,000 owed on back taxes.
Yeah.
Well, we assigned that contract, and we made a $27,000 net profit on it. And I was afraid to buy it. I was like, we're not buying anything with environmental issues.
Who would buy? Like, so someone wanted the building. It doesn't. That's the crazy part. So like, for our listeners out there, and this goes for anything, not just real estate investing, for anything. Like, there is a difference between the price of something versus what someone else will pay for it. And you never know. You never know just because it's listed at this. Like, that is not necessarily its value. Things, items, assets, everything has shifting value based on what someone else will pay for it. And if you can nail that down and you know, I love this strategy, man. I think I'm going to sign up for your course and I'm going to be your star student because I got a couple cell phone bills that I can fence into some land. But man, this is really exciting. Can you speak a little bit, man? I have so many questions about this, but can you speak, you know, a little bit about whether you want to go and like, are you looking at completely vacant? You said unbuildable or buildable, like, you know, do you want utilities on this land or
no?
Does it matter?
I'll buy any land. I get asked all the time, what land will you not buy? And I was like, the non-profitable stuff. Like, and I keep it so simple. I don't develop it. I don't subdivide it. I don't do anything with it. I just buy it at a discount and turn around and sell it for a profit. So I don't care if there's utilities. I don't care if it's not buildable. The second deal I did was also not buildable. But it was also, here's the next thing, it was not accessible. You couldn't get to it without trespassing against state land. But I disclosed that to myself or to my buyer.
Yeah.
And he didn't care. He got, that one was $500, by the way.
Yeah.
And he paid me the $500 down and $400 a month for a total of
what did he want it for?
He just wanted to own it, you know, to hunt on it because it literally like bordered state land. So no one would ever build all around him. So it's just like just incredible piece of land. I told him, I was like, you're going to have to talk to a real estate attorney to get access to this thing. And it could cost you a lot of money. So that's why I sold it to him for $5,000 on payments. Mm-hmm. Boy, if he ever gets access to that land, it's probably worth $500,000.
Wow. Just because the, you know, where it is and it's so close to the state park and all of this stuff, man. That is wild. That is wild stuff. So we talked a lot about here about what land to buy or what to look for, and you're going to share that resource with our listeners. And you know, finding the buyers. What's your strategy for finding buyers? I mean, are you running, you know, I mean, obviously you got to build a brand like you would anything else. You build a team, and you know, are you running paid traffic? Are you doing how are you building your buyers list for people who want land?
Yeah. And that is key. You said it, building the buyer's list. I have two goals on every person, every lead that comes in our door and says, hey, or asks us a question or sends us a message on Facebook or replies to our Craigslist ad. I have two goals for them. One is I want to sell them the land. Two, I want to get their digits. So I want my team to answer all their questions and serve them. And at the end, if they don't want to purchase that parcel of land, after we ask them if they want to purchase, hey, you know, what card would you like to put this on? Or, you know, do you want to do the deal type thing? If they don't, they say, we say, great. You know, we come across properties all the time. Is it okay if we reach out to you next time we have one? And of course, 9 out of 10 times they're going to say yes. So we get their phone number and their email. And now they're in our database. That's how we have a buyer's list. That's like, just when we get a piece of land now, it's gone.
Well, yeah. Now you're sending an email campaign out to your preferred buyers. You tag them a certain way, and boom, you know, someone's going to bite on it. Yeah, whatever. I mean, something that gets people's attention, and that's a great idea. So, and like when you're finding these folks, when you're starting out, if someone's starting out, how would you recommend going about finding potential land buyers? Is there a list that you can find of people? Yeah. Like, what does that look like?
Let's give them some practical extras or steps. Actually, I sold my first 10 parcels of land on Craigslist. I didn't know any other ways to sell it. No. Craigslist. And what's funny is I was also building a buyer's list for houses because I was wholesaling houses too. I was getting houses under contract. I looked at the 3 lowest comps, try and get it for lower, and assign that contract. Well, what's funny is one of my cash buyers, I wasn't smart enough to blast my land deals to my house cash buyer list. So one of my house cash buyers saw my ad on Craigslist and said, hey, what's up with that land you've got? I was like, oh, it's already sold. I'm like, were you interested? He goes, yeah, absolutely. I'll build a house on it. And I was thinking to myself, I didn't even think about, like, I just assumed the two were separate. I thought I was building two separate businesses. I wasn't. I was building one that went hand in hand together. So first 10 were on Craigslist. Then I started getting on buy sell groups on Facebook. This stuff's free. Like, you can list this stuff for free. Then what was really working for me was putting signs on the property and around the property, because that would attract the neighbors. The neighbors, like, even some of these were not buildable lots. Like, neighbors would buy it for it to build a playground, or just to put a shed or a garden. You name it. There's a buyer for every piece of land. There absolutely is. And then we started doing neighbor letters. Like, hey, I got the land next door to you. I'd be interested in selling it. Wanted to let you know first. I'd even hold financing. Call me. So we call those neighbor letters. And then lastly, I'll share right now, one that's working really well for me is LandSentry.com. If you got one parcel of land you're trying to sell, LandSentry will let you list it for $15.
Wow. And yeah, so they're just like a listing service where people go and shop.
There you go. And then you talk about Zillow. That's free. Mm-hmm. Put it on Zillow.
Yeah, no, that's unbelievable, man. So many nuggets shared here. One final question before we go to the bonus round: financing and contracts. What, you know, you touched on it earlier about, well, I didn't have the cash in the beginning to start and stuff. Are banks lending on this stuff for you, or is it like traditional financing, or is it not so much? Are you getting 80% LTV loan to value on a piece of vacant land, or how does that work?
I wish.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, quick answer, no. And I'm glad you backtracked to that, because I wanted to answer that more. You know, the first ones I was doing myself, before I had cash, I would line the cash up. Sometimes I literally, like, if it's a big piece of land, like I got 44 acres under contract from a bank one time. For 25 grand, and it was right next to Schriever Air Force Base. This stuff was worth like $100,000. So I just got this piece of land at 25 cents on the dollar. Well, I went out on a Sunday. I got it under contract Friday night, went out on a Sunday, put signs everywhere. 44 acres, must sell, phone number, 38K. Well, I assigned that contract for just a quick $13,000 net profit. And what's really crazy is the next day after I shook hands, I found my buyer that day for that piece of land, by the way. Mm-hmm. So there's something, you know, I feel like God blesses you when you go out there and work, type thing. Cause I was freaking out. I thought this bank would sue me if I didn't buy this land. I didn't have 25 grand. So I sold my contract, got this thing under contract with the bank, sold it to a rancher looking for another piece of land, and got literally a $14,000 higher offer the next day. But I'd already shaken hands with this gentleman on the side of the road, and I was like in such a predicament. I'm like, 14 grand would have changed my life back then. So I called him. I was like, hey, I got a higher offer. What do you think about splitting the higher offer with me? Like, I'm going to give you $7,000 for just meeting me on the side of the road. Deal? He goes, no deal. I want the land. I was like, all right. So I sold it to him, made a quick $13,000. So that's how you can assign with no money. And then I had people like figuring out what I was doing. They saw that I was making like 300 to 900% return on investment with this land. They wanted in. Mm-hmm. So I had partners, people with money, 401ks, IRAs that they can self-direct.
What about 1031?
Military officers, you know.
What about 1031 money? Can that work?
Yeah, you can 1031 with
land. Because it's real estate, real estate. Yeah.
That's right. As long as it's like a dollar more. So if you're selling this big like rental or whatever, as long as it's a dollar more. And I'm not an expert on 1031s. I've only done one of them. Actually, no, three of them. But it was all at once.
Right. Yeah. You got to work through the custodian. You got to make sure you're on the, you know, everything's on the up and up there. But oh man, that's awesome. So, and you're putting these signs out. You literally go get them made probably for a couple hundred bucks and you're nailing them into the ground. And like, or are they bandit signs?
Not a couple hundred bucks? No way. I didn't have a couple hundred bucks.
So what are these, like bandit signs or something?
Yeah,
like,
they were bandit signs that I had. I just turned them around and wrote on them with a big black Sharpie Magnum marker. Or you can go to the sign shop, give them $20 cash, and they'll give you a big one of those plastic corrugated, yellow, white. Cut those things up and put stakes on them. It's like maybe $40 on signs, $50.
Dude, this is amazing. I love this episode, guys. If you're finding value in this, please share this with someone you know in your shop and on base, on post, wherever, because this is really, really incredible. And like, we talk about, you know, all different ways and low cost ways to get into real estate and all of this stuff. And this, for me, this is like a potential game changer. I'm vibing really hard on this. And Brent, we're going to have some conversations later because I think it'd be a great source of passive income. And at the end of the day, real wealth is converting your active income into multiple streams of independent passive income, whatever that looks like. If that means owning a business, if that means, you know, buying raw land, if that means getting short-term rentals, you need to be diversified. And this sounds like a great way for someone in the military, low cost, to start doing things. And like you said earlier, it's kind of like the mobile home park game where like people are, you know, it is technically a barrier to entry, but it's just like the misconceptions of owning land. And people are like, who the hell wants vacant land?
Yeah.
And because of that, there's way, way, way less competition out there. So that is something that is super intriguing, super incredible, because there's a million wholesalers, you know, buy and hold investors are everywhere. Now short-term rental investors are everywhere, you know, and the reason they're there is because it's easy for people to understand. Oh, I put human being in this house, human being pays me, you know, like that. Yeah. That's how it works. But with land, because those synapses aren't necessarily firing, it's not as apparent and in your face, there is less people doing it. And guess what? There's a crap ton of land in this country. So I love this, Brent.
You know what there is a lot of usually outside of military, military gates, military post is land. Because military usually puts the post right in the middle of nowhere or cheap land. So there's a lot of land on the outskirts of post. And that's one place I find my buyers are people in the military, you know, truck drivers, like people that have a job. Like, who's my buyer? People that usually have a 9-to-5 or a W-2 job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they just want, they want to buy the land to go camping, go hunting. They just want that land to get out of the city, out of whatever they're doing. And you know, maybe it's their dream land. Maybe they're going to build a house on it. Maybe they're not, but it doesn't matter, because if you can, at the end of the day, if you can find the sellers, which is pretty easy, you get a list, right? You get your tax delinquent list. You start looking at the properties that are coming in. You do your due diligence. And guys, remember, click that link in the show notes and you'll get that free list. Then you connect them with buyers who you're finding from, what was it, Century?
LandCentury.com.
LandCentury.com or Craigslist ads or whatever, like super cheap. And then, you know, connecting the dots. and adding that value. So, all right, Brent, this has been awesome. We are, oh my goodness, we're over time, but we're going to get into the bonus round real quick because I'm just very, obviously very excited about this. So
this is so exciting. It's like the highlight of my week. I mean, this is why I'm here on a Saturday, and God bless you for doing it as well. Cause this is usually family time, but I'm having a blast.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get you back to your family and your babies, as soon as possible. So we're going to hit you with these same four questions in this bonus round. We get every single person on the show. This is episode 207. So man, the other 206 guests have answered these questions and you will too. Question number one, what book or software has really been crushing it for you lately?
You said what book or software?
Yeah. Whatever.
So I'm a huge advocate on The Wealthy Gardener. That's an amazing book. I wish someone would chain me to a desk when I was 18 years old and made me read it. The Wealthy Gardener.
And who writes that one? The Wealthy Gardener.
Oh, man. I knew you'd ask that.
We'll Google it. It's okay. It's okay.
All right.
Question number two. Who's your biggest hero and why?
My wife, I was going to say, but also my mom. You know, two women. I'm going to pick two. I hope that's okay. My wife's my hero.
Ten.
What's that?
You said you can have 10.
All right. Why is my mom my hero? Because, you know, growing up, I mean, she worked a full-time job, came home, cooked dinner, cleaned the house, and just did it all, never complained. And the same thing with my wife. You know, we have now three babies. She literally put her career on hold for the last 5 years. That took a lot of sacrifice. Like, I couldn't do that. Like, so just a selfless service that these two women have done.
I love that, man. That's really powerful to have a, you know, a partner in crime, for lack of a better term, to help you out there. And that's what it's about. It's about, we do this to free up our time and spend more time with our families. Question number three, Brent, what do you like to do for fun?
Well, as soon as I take these headphones off, I'm ripping this shirt off and jumping in the pool. So right now, it's going to be a pool party for fun. So
there you go.
I love water sports, love ATVs, dirt bikes, mountains. But today it's pool.
All right. That sounds like fun. And you've dropped so many nuggets for us, Brent. But in this last question, I'm just going to ask a little bit more. Question number four. If you had three nuggets of wisdom for anyone right now who is listening to this and they're having this epiphany moment, and they're like, oh my God, I should buy land. You know, I'm in the military. What am I doing? Like, what would those three nuggets be?
One, hire a coach. Two, stop the education and pull the trigger. Take the action steps. Three, dang it, I just lost the third one. Oh, time block. Mm-hmm. You've got to set a time block. People think, I mean, when I talk to people all the time, you know, what are you doing in your business? What does your day look like? I'm spending all this time working. I'm working nights and evenings. And well, what does that look like? What does work look like for you? Well, I'm doing this, that, and the other. All right, where's your cell phone? Is it chirping whenever someone texts you or Facebooks you or your email? Is your email notifications off? Because I find that they think they're working, but they're emailing, they're responding to text messages, they're responding to phone calls. Mm-hmm. And my email pisses me off more than anything because it's someone else's to-do list for me. When I've got a task or a mission, like everything else goes off, no one can bother me. And I just focus on that one thing. And we think that multitasking is literally the worst productivity thing that ever could happen. Your brain can't do it. So you got to focus, and it doesn't have to be a long period of time. It could be 59 minutes. Set that timer, focus on that thing. You can write a book for 59 minutes a day.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I love the time blocking. I love the hiring a coach, guys. And you know, that has changed my life. Understanding that, yes, you can figure it out. If you wanted to learn how to buy land, for example, you could definitely figure it out. I don't doubt it. Will it take you much, incredibly much longer than hiring a coach to do that? Absolutely. Like when you go and look at a coach or an expert or whoever, a mentor, that it's like taking the fast lane. That's all it is.
And compressing time.
You're compressing time. And at the end of the day, time is the one commodity that we will never get back. So if you think about it, your money is going to come and go. So if you're worried about that and you want to get started in something, whatever that something is, hire a freaking coach. If you want to be a bodybuilder, hire a coach. Don't funny try to figure out the that. Exercises on your own.
That's so funny you say that, because I've got a guy, I won't say his name. He's done like 55 land deals. He's one of my students. He is a bodybuilder. And he actually trained me for a little while before I moved back to Florida. And it was like the best thing ever. Like, he's training me and I'm like seeing gains like crazy because this guy's teaching me the techniques. And it was almost like a hand in hand like type partnership. It was amazing.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. No, but like, that's the whole thing. Like, you can figure out the exercises on your own, or you can go hire someone who knows what the heck they're talking about. And lo and behold, you'll find results much, much faster. So Brent, man, this was a pleasure. I think we had this podcast. I've been excited for the past 3 months to get you on this show. And I am so glad. I'm so excited that you were able to make it. And man, where can our listeners get in touch with you?
And a couple places, you know, you can head over to thelandsharks.com. I literally just launched my YouTube channel, Brent Bowers, or hit me up on Instagram, Brent L. Bowers. There's three options for you.
And he's on Clubhouse. Brent is on Clubhouse as well. I think your room is called Massive Passive Income with Land, right? Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. I try to change it up. I'm usually on every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern.
There you go. So all over the place, you can find Brent. Brent, I will certainly be bothering you after this, but after pool time, I'll hit you up next week.
No bother. My pleasure.
And it's going to be an absolute blast, man. So thank you so much for your time, dude. And we'll get you to your family.
My pleasure, Kevin. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. We'll see you.
Outstanding. That was an awesome episode. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thanks to you for listening. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, make sure you go and do that. Or schedule a call with us by texting ADPI to 444-999 or checking out our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to find out how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today. I'll see you guys next week.